What is up, Laurier? We are back with another episode of Gold and Bold. We are here. It's me again, Nathan Pagliarulli, your host for this episode of Gold and Bold. I'm joined today by nobody. It's midterm season for a lot of, not just Laurier students, but a lot of students around Ontario. That means it's hard to get people to talk about sports during one of the biggest weeks of sports. It's just one of those unfortunate circumstances that we have to deal with here. But nonetheless, the show must go on, and I'm here to give you that show. This week, it's a big week, big important week. Team Canada just played this morning. Big win for them. Laurier has all their sports seasons, men's basketball, men's hockey, women's basketball. Those are all coming to a close this coming weekend. And there's still a lot to be decided, and we're going to get through that all this episode of Gold and Bold. So first, we got to talk about it. Laurier women's hockey. It's been a very, very positive talking point for majority of the year so far. Really speaking about it, it's been majority of the year high-flying. It seems like they're almost untouchable. Now, they have lost the last two games. Or I believe it's been the last two games. They have not looked good. U of T, they lost a brutal one, 2-1 in regulation. They blew a 1-0 lead late. They gave up two penalties very late in that game. 5-on-3 goal for U of T shatters Laurier's odds. If they're not done yet, Laurier, from my math and from people around the organization, have said that it's not over for the Golden Hawks. It really is not. But it will be more of a climb upwards as they play Ontario Tech tonight. That's a massive game, and they have to win that game in overtime for them to have an opportunity to have a shot at the one seed. And the one seed's a bye. And I'm not saying, hey, this team, without a bye, it's not going to do anything. But if you take away their bye week, they're looking, it's going to be a climb, because then you potentially have to play Waterloo. And Waterloo's been a boogeyman for this team the entire year. It's one of the teams that's really one of the only teams that's beaten them this year. And, well, it's just really not a spot you want to be in for this women's team. That really, it looked like that at one point they had not lost since November. Until they played that game against Waterloo, Battle of Waterloo, and they just get beat 4-3. This team that does not allow 4 goals per game, and they get beat. And it's just an idea, it's just a thought about did the team get too hot too early? We've seen this time and time again in sports. Teams like, let's say, the Boston Bruins from 2023, the Toronto Maple Leafs every year, Tampa Bay Lightning's 2019 team. Are these teams that get way too hot, way too early, and they just fizzle out by the time the playoffs come around? Is that the case that we're going to see with this Golden Hawks team? And people, everyone around campus, they do not want this to happen. They do not want a great season to go to waste like that. But really, realistically, this season comes down to Thursday night and Saturday night. And it's going to come down to what Guelph does, too. Guelph plays the Brock Badgers. And no disrespect to Brock. They're 11-11, two shootout losses. They're very much on the outside looking in. I don't think there's playoffs for them in the future. I've had the pleasure of watching one of their games. They're not in the same league as the Guelphs, Lauriers, Queens of the women's hockey. It's just what it is. They're just not that good. And do I think after they took an 8-0 shellacking at the hands of the Guelph Griffins in St. Catharines, do I think that team has it what it takes to go and maybe even push this game to overtime? Because for people who don't know, OUA hockey uses the Olympic international system for points, the 3-2-1-0 point system. And do I hope Brock wins? Of course I hope Brock wins. I'm a big Brock Badgers fan. I have many friends out there. For sure, I love to see Brock win. I want to see Brock succeed in life. But do I think this Brock team is even going to stand a chance to this Guelph team? No. Do I think OTEC upsets the Golden Hawks? I think there's a higher chance of it happening than Brock upsetting Laurier, than Brock upsetting Guelph, but I don't think there's a high enough chance for it to be a concern. So what really comes down to this, I've done the research on it, I've done the tiebreakers, and from what I have calculated is that Laurier must win regulation against the Guelph Griffins. So this comes down to a scenario where you're sitting on Valentine's Day, and because you've collapsed down the stretch, like if they force one of those two games where they blow the game late against U of T or Waterloo, you don't need to win regulation because you're going to steal a point or two from Waterloo. You can steal a point or two from Toronto, and all of a sudden, you're not looking at a point deficit like you are right now. But, and that loss against Guelph earlier in the season, that hurt them too. But they really just need to win. 2-0, and you're the one seed, and you're looking at a very, very clear path towards the playoffs. And if you're this women's team, you really need that clear path towards the playoffs, because right now there's some teams on the way there. Teams such as Waterloo, teams such as Guelph, that you really don't want to see in your path to the McCaw Cup. Now time to really flip it over from one staggering team that's just have the wheels have kind of fallen off to another staggering hockey team, a team where the wheels have fallen off, the Laurier men's team. Now, I was early in the season, I was probably the biggest supporter of this team. Now, I don't think I can be for it, because really, if you look at their last 10 games, they are 4-3-3. You just cannot go 4-3-3 down the in a playoff push stretch. Granted, they still have opportunities to make the playoffs. The OUA West on the men's side of things is ultra tight, ultra competitive. And you're just not going to get a case where you see on the women's side where teams have 50, 60, almost 50 points or 50, 60 points. You're going to see teams like Windsor, top team in the OUA West, 37 points. Laurier sits in fifth, 31 points. It's a 6-point difference, but there's not many games left. They only have the two games left, and it's getting tight. Do I think this team deserves to make it to the playoffs? Because if you really think about it, with this team, they started out 6-0. At one point, sat 9-3. Now they sit 13-8-4. That's a near 500 record. It's just been a complete fall off. The wheels have fallen off this team, and we can associate it to multiple things. Maybe losing Bryce Kilbourne, that's a huge loss. They lost him to the Windsor Police Force. But that's a huge loss for a team like that. But it's not over yet. It really is not. They play York, their next game is against York. No disrespect to York. I respect the school. I respect the program. Their athletics are garbage. But, and the hockey team has just been the pinnacle of that. 5-19-2. If you lose that game, you have no right being in the playoffs. Now, another game, the last game of the season is against Guelph. That is the biggest must win you will get in a regular season. Because what you're going to get is a team that has been at pace with you for the entire season. They sit 2 points up on the Laurier Golden Hawks, and that one could be the decider for if this team is a playoff team or not. And I feel like with the team, Lucas Chard, Andrew Ness, these players are too good to miss the playoffs. They have the underlying talent. It's just, do they want to show up and play? Do they want to come out? Do they want to not be flat? I feel like that's been, for Laurier hockey, that's the word to describe them as of late. Flat. They've simply put, they have not been good. Like, I can just describe you. I've had the displeasure. I'm gonna call it, say, displeasure, probably one of the first times in a while, of watching Laurier hockey as of late, and it has just not been good by any means. Like, any means necessary. It has just been, simply put, it's not been fun to watch as a fan, as a broadcaster. It has been like this is the run stretch at the time where you expect exciting hockey, and it's just been heartbreaker, heartbreaker, heartbreaker. Maybe has the team run out of gas? Have both teams run out of gas? We don't know what's really happening in these locker rooms, but we would rather them pick up the pace, especially for the playoffs, especially down these last two stretches, for both the Golden Hawks hockey teams to make the playoffs. For the women's team, they've already clinched. But can they get that one seed? It's a pivotal one seed. Now, kind of really flip over to basketball. Things get a little bit more darker. Things are getting a little bit more gloomier. Laurier women's basketball, they haven't been the best speaking point on this show. especially since the semester started, and it's been understandingly so, they really haven't been in a playoff spot. It's even though OUA women's basketball, 12 of 18 teams make it, there's going to be some pretty bad teams making the playoffs, some teams that have no right making the playoffs, and it's going to be like a McMaster or a Lakehead, a 9 or 8 win team touching these playoffs, and it's just Laurier women's team could not make it. Granted, they did win their last game. We have to give them that. They beat U of T, and they beat them handily. The problem is the U of T is just as bad as them. So you really got to think, where does this team go from now? Beating a team that is just as bad as you, but you beat them pretty well, beating by 15 points, that's a good sign moving forward. And I feel like with this Laurier women's team, it's been said time and time again, you got to look towards the future. You got to look towards, how are we going to build towards the future? How are we going to improve? How are we going to build upon next year? Because if really, even before the season, no one would have expected, there's no expectations on this team, and they're going to be a 5, maybe 6 win team come the weekend. And if they met expectations, like, we weren't expecting much, and they didn't give much. And if you really want to talk about it like that, they really met expectations. Now to move over to the men's side of things, they have had probably the most funniest season. It just does not make sense. This men's team does not make sense. They can beat a Western, they can hang in with the big boys, and then they blow the doors off a horrible McMaster team. Simply put, I'm not here to disrespect McMaster, but their men's basketball team, it's not the team it used to be. It's not the world beater team it used to be. It's a 2-win Algoma level squad. They blow the doors off McMaster. They beat Western. They beat Waterloo in the Battle of Waterloo. Things are looking up. Then they lose to U of T, a team that I feel like that was the most must-win game. Because here's the thing. Once again, it's a 12-team playoff. Laurier is on the inside 12 seed. They're holding on for dear life. There's a team in the 11 seed sitting right above you. Go beat them so you don't have to go play at power school. Potentially have to go play in Ottawa or Queens. You don't have to go play there. You can potentially get maybe more local matchup. And they just could not get it done. They lose 85-76, and they had foul problems. Now they go down. Well, now they have two home games, pivotal home games, in my opinion. One of them is against Brock. That's a Friday nighter. And if I'm Coach Cavell, and I have that playoff seed locked in, if I have that 12 seed locked in, more or less, or if I need one win, because realistically, you're not catching the 11 seed. Like, kiss the 11 seed goodbye. Kiss anything other than the 12 seed goodbye. Your success, your ceiling right now is the 12 seed. I would punt the game against Brock. I know you don't want it, but I would end the season. You see a horrible New York team. Once again, New York Athletics. Like, really, the only team that's good there is their men's volleyball. But York Athletics needs to get going. They're 4-16. That's a team where I'm licking my chops. I'm going to blow the doors off that team before I get to the playoffs. But if you really think about it, like, this Laurier men's team, they're going to have to go play a powerhouse. I can just do the calculations now of who they're going to play in the first round. It's going to be a 5 seed. It's going to be Ottawa. If I'm the Golden Hawks, I like to talk. What's their ceiling for the playoffs? What's their floor? What do they have in them? I don't know what they have in them, this men's team. They have some phenomenal shooters, but they're one-dimensional. They're very one-dimensional. They are, if Steph Curry got cloned 5 times, that's too much glaze, in my opinion, for that type of team. They just chuck the 3-ball. It's like there's no game plan but just shoot the 3. The stats back that up. They're a 3-point shooting only team, and the ceiling for this team, realistically, I would be very proud of this team if I'm Coach Cavell. If they upset Ottawa and they hold it to a close game in the second round, can they do that? I don't know. Can they go beat Ottawa? Then go, the 4 seed right now would be Brock. Can they go beat Ottawa and then beat Brock? I don't think so. I really don't think so. They have upset potential. They beat nationally ranked Western. They've had Western's number, it feels like, the entire season. But can you think? I don't think so. I really don't. I'm really by myself right now. Like, there's no one here in this room that can counter that opinion, which sucks, because I would like to hear what other people have to say about that. But you can really speak to a point where you have no one on this team that really is elite, super put elite. They need someone to support them. They move the ball really well. They do move the ball really well, and they shoot really well. But they get icy hot, icy cold, and then really hot. Icy hot. Oh, man, that brings me back. That brings me back to my playing time. It's just, if you really want to think about it with this team, they need consistency. If they're consistent, I don't mean consistently bad. I mean consistently above average. They're going to have a shot in beating a lot of teams. Because I said this on the broadcast. I've said this time and time again. This is OUA basketball. No disrespect to the athletes in OUA basketball. But this is no 2017, 2016 Golden State. This is not Chino Hills. This is not some elite basketball NCAA. We're not playing Prime Duke. This is OUA basketball. These teams are much closer than we'd like to admit. It's just who can stay the most consistently above average for the longest stretch of time. And if the Golden Hawks can do that come playoff time, then yes, they can upset Ottawa. They can upset Brock. They can make a run at a cup. They can make a run at the championship. But right now, the way they're playing, their ceiling, their maximum ceiling, absolute maximum ceiling, is a second round elimination. It's if you stick close with a second round elimination against a Brock team, congrats. That's a great season for the Laurier men's basketball team. If you somehow miss the playoffs, I think there needs to be serious talent evaluations, especially the way your season, like the schedule ended. If you get McMaster and York through two of your final three games, you better make the, and you only really need to win one, you better make the playoffs. That's really my thoughts on the men's team. They're a team that is super volatile. They're super inconsistent. They're talented, but they don't blow you away. They're one-dimensional. I feel like if they can really, maybe even it's late in the season to add a second dimension, but if they can get to the line more, if they can shoot more, if they can get more consistent with three-point attempts, maybe bump it up a few extra percentage points from beyond the arc, they could be a dangerous team come playoff time. Now, to kind of switch it over, to switch gears, Team Canada played today. And I'm wearing my Celebrini jersey for a very, very obvious reason. The Canadian team beat the Boogeyman. They beat the Czechia. Czechia has, for people who don't know, has been, especially in the World Juniors, the Boogeyman of this Canadian team. They've just had our number the entire year. The entire, like, feels like half decade now. And they finally get it done, and they get it done, and there was no cardiac involved with that. It was just a clean, easy win. They chopped the neck off, clean, easy kill. Wow. Like, one would think, yes, a team with every talented player, like the most talented players in the NHL, can handily beat a Czech team, which is really only running Tomáš Hertl, Lukáš Dostál, and David Pastrnak as like their name brand players. Radko Gudas is a name brand player on the Czech team. Like, if Canada lost to this team, there would be serious like calls for concern. But they didn't just beat them; they decimated this Czech team, and it was close. It was close for the first period, I will say that. But come the second period, the wheels fell off that Czech team, and all of a sudden, the $120-some-odd million Canadian team absolutely laid it out. Tom Wilson was surprisingly good. Like, I don't think he was playing the puck all that game, but he has an element to this Canadian team. Like, you would think after that game, like, the last person you'd be talking about is Tom Wilson. But I think his size, and just because he's such a presence on the ice, it gives McDavid, it gives Celebrini, like, all the more space they need to go and do what they do. McDavid was driving the net every time. Like, he was just ghosting these Czech defenders. I hate to see what's going to happen when he matches up against a Swiss team. oh my, he's going to blow the doors off a Swiss team. He's absolutely going to like decimate a Swiss team. Like, that's the next game. It's going to be Switzerland. And I don't know how many goals they're going to score. They might score 10. No disrespect to the Swiss team, but they're going to blow the doors off that team. It's a scary thought now to really think about it, because where is the ceiling for this team? It's a gold medal. And I think right now you've set the standard for the Canadian team. It's gold medal or bust. And that's a lot of pressure. But these are a lot of guys that have figured it out. Mitch Marner looked good. Mark Stone looked good. There was not one player I can really point to and say, you weren't great. Even Jordan Bennington, the biggest question mark on this Canadian squad, looked good. He looked great. Now, how much can we base it on? They played what we would assume to be the best team the best competition they're going to see until they get to the quarters. We're waiting to see how good this American United States team, the Swedish team, they played a game which I thought they were going to lose. I thought they were going to lose to Italy at times. It was 2-2, even though the shots were like 30-4. I had no clue the Italian team was staking with it. The Italian team is running with a bunch of AHL and EuroLeague players, playing against some of the best NHL players in the world. I had no clue how this game was close. But once again, anything can happen. It's hockey. Anything can happen, but that's the closest the Italian team is going to get at winning a game, maybe until they play like a bottom feeder. But it has just been, it's just not been fun for the Italian team. I would hate. Good thing they don't have to play. I'm pretty sure they don't have to play the Canadian team. That would be abuse if they had to play this Canadian team. I hate using these schedules. Give me Canada. Give me men's hockey. All right, so it won't give me the schedule. All right. But the women's team, on the other hand, they've been a concern for me. The team that's usually the most dominant, the Canadian women's team, they're down Poulin, and they lose 5-0 to the Americans. That's heartbreak. Congrats. It's only the prelim round. That's the thing. It's only the prelim round. What, like, it can't get worse than that because it's the prelims. But, like, yeah, it's not what you want to, not a game like you want to get blown out in, especially against the Americans. You just don't want to do that. You do not want to get blown out by the Americans. That's like DEFCON 1, don't do it. And they got blown up by the Americans. That's move past it and just win. Just win, baby. Going back to the men's team, I finally got the schedule. Switzerland at 3:10 p.m. Eastern on Friday. Blowout. Then they go and play France. Oh, blowout. And I think that finishes up for them. They play the three games, so Canada's going to have a crazy cold goal differential. They beat Czechia 5-0. That was the important part. They beat Czechia, and they beat them handily. So now it's just, for me, for this Canadian team, just absolutely farm the goal differential and see what you want to get that one seed. Teams are seeded 1 through 12. You can get that one seed. Avoid the United States until the gold medal round, because I'll be the first to admit that U.S. men's team, it does scare me a little bit if I'm the Canadian men's team. Even though I think the Canadian men's team is the greatest team we've ever put on ice, I don't think it will handily beat a United States team like we all want to think. On the other hand, I do think in the deepest part of my heart that this team would beat a United States team handily. Just absolutely run them through over. Now, it's kind of the switch pace to Canadian Olympics just in general. It has not been the greatest Canadian Olympics, especially for all Canadians. There's no gold so far. We're about a week into the Olympics. Not a single gold for the Canadians. 3 silvers, 3 bronze. Just a lackluster Olympics. The Italians are doing well. The Norwegians, the Americans. Canada sent about 200-something athletes. I understand we're only about 11, 12 events in that have been completed. But where are the medals? Where are they? It has just been disappointing to not just to say the least. I don't want to disrespect the athletes, but you sit 15th in not necessarily total medal count, but we lack a gold. And because we lack a gold, we're put down all the way because we just lack gold. We have no gold. So they're going to put us out on 15th. We got to rile it back. We got to get gold because we only have 6 medals. And I think a gold would do wonders for the Canadians. Somehow Italy has 16 medals. Don't ask me how. The known winter sport athletes, the Italians. Americans have 14. Norwegians have 14. They have 7 gold. Incredible performance once again by the Norwegians. Germany, 9. France, 12. Japan, 10. Incredible performance from them so far, especially the snowboarding events. They got some good guys on the slopes. They got some talent on the slopes. Austria, 12. But Canada, 6 medals, no gold. France has 8. They got 4 gold. Where are the gold medals? All the Canadians are looking for them. We can't find them. So it will be interesting to see. I think the men's team, that's your gold medal type of team. But where are the individuals that are going to get gold for Canada? And I'm really intrigued on speed skating. I'm intrigued on if we can do anything more snowboarding, because I don't know where else we can medal, because we usually get gold in curling and we just didn't win curling. So I'm concerned. I'm slightly concerned for this Canadian team if they're going to find a gold medal or even more medals, because right now, so far, it's been rather lackluster. Now I've kind of moved away from the Olympics. It's MLB free agency time. I thought it was over. It really isn't over. Well, not really free agency, but it's MLB time. So pitchers and catchers reported, I believe, a few days ago. Things are going well, but everyone's breaking their Hamlet bone. Corbin Carroll, Francisco Lindor, and I believe it was it Anthony Santander? No. Did he break something else? Give me 1 second. Who else broke a Hamlet bone? This was fun when you can bounce ideas or get information on what you're missing from the people around you. But, you know, people just have exams this week, and it's just unfortunate. It really is unfortunate that people have all the exams right now when it's such a huge week. Who is it? Lindor? Lindor and Carroll, I know for sure. And basically what this bone is the Hamlet bone. It breaks when the knob of your handle comes into contact with your, Jackson Holliday. That's who it is. So just big stars have been really injured by this Hamlet fractures, which is when the knob comes into contact basically with your palm and it fractures that part of your hand when you swing. So super unfortunate for them. Super unfortunate for those teams, but bigger news coming out of Toronto. Anthony Santander needs surgery. He's out 5 to 6 months. They're saying it's re-aggravated. He re-aggravated something or aggravated something during the ramp-up process. I don't think so. Anthony Santander probably had this issue. He's had underlying issues ever since he's joined the Jays, whether it be the lack of hitting the ball, rather be the lack of anything. He just hasn't either not been playing. He played exactly a third of games this season for the Jays last season. He's just not been good. Simply put, not good. He has, when he did play for the Jays in April, May, he was Mr. Pop-Out. Like, I would sit in the 500s. I would have the district deals. But I think it was like $179, and you got all home games March, April, May. Forever join me for those. If any of my friends are listening to that, that's the deal I got. And I don't think they're running it back this year because they went to the World Series. But I'd sit up in the 500s. I think it was like section 520 or something. And I'm sitting up there. I'm like this. I'll be like here. I'll be watching. I'll be like top of the fourth or something against I don't know who. I don't care. Probably the Mariners. I think it was the Mariners. And I was just sitting up there. And Anthony Santander is up the bat. And I'd see the ball get up to my eye level. And I'm sitting in the 500s. And it's not good because the 520s, for those who know Rogers Center, that's behind home plate. You don't want the ball to be up there. And I just be sitting, it's be sitting there eye line with me. I'm like, you're not supposed to be up here. It's a long way up ball. It's not a long way. Like, I'd love to see it if I was sitting on the outfield, but no, shouldn't be up here. And he was just, that was Anthony Santander in a nutshell. He would just be there and he'd just be hacking away, but not hacking away like in a good thing. He'd just be popping everything up. I'm like, what is this guy doing? I play ball. What are you doing, pop-up boy? Well, why is the ball within my eye level? Why do I feel like I can go out and just grab it? Why is it going at that trajectory? It was not a fun watch to watch Anthony Santander play baseball. What else is there is he's now out 5 to 6 months, and all of a sudden, a guy you were banking on to have a bounce-back season, I was one of them. I was one of them to have banking on him to have a bounce back season, especially after you lost a bat like Bo Bichette. You lose a bat like him, and he is like, that's your 300 hitter guy that can get on base. But you still have Anthony Santander. You have Okamoto. You have guys that can hit for power. You can guys that have, you have still have guys that can get on base, but you're really banking on Santander to really fit in that 3-4 slot. And for him to really, you know, step it up again, like the Jays signed him 5 years, $100 million for a reason. Show your worth. And all of a sudden, he's out 5 to 6 months. I have a feeling he's needed the surgery for a while. But he just decided not to get it. And all of a sudden, now there's talks of him being the next Anthony Rendon. I don't think he's the next Anthony Rendon. Anthony Rendon hated baseball. I don't think Santander's there yet. But to the point that Jays fans are angry, they're rightfully so, they're mad, because you're telling me we're paying you $20 million a year for you to not play for us? You've only played about 60-something games for us, 5 to 6 months of a baseball season, and let's assume February, so the season starts in March. Let's take 2 months off of that. So he's going to be gone about, 3 to 4 months of the season? March, April, not even March, April, May, June. Might be back in July. I highly doubt it. This is the type of guy that's going to re-aggravate something. Wait, he's going to show up in August? Like, congrats. You might show up after the All-Star break. This is a team that could use you down the open stretch. I understand we could use maybe down the back stretch. This is not a type of injury where you missed the first four or five months of a season, and all of a sudden you come back. You're not going to input a restraint in the lineup. You're going to need a rehab stint. You're going to need to go through probably the Florida complex, probably double A, probably triple A. Then all of a sudden, you're going to have to get back to the major leagues through a rehab stint. And is that a $100 million player? A guy who's going to probably play maybe 100 games for the Jays in his first two seasons. Maybe 100 games. Capital M on the maybe. I highly doubt he might not even be back this season. This is the type of guy who's going to re-aggravate something again and not be back. And all of a sudden, you're looking at it, do we add another bat? Ross Atkins came out and said, hey, we're always looking to add. We're always looking to add. And it's just, where do you add? Nick Castellanos just got released. I'm a big fan of Nick Castellanos. I just got word that he probably got released because he brought beer into the dugout. Yikes, you can't do that, Nick. But here's the thing. If you want an Anthony Santander-esque player, I know some people are going to disagree with me on this, but I do think Nick Castellanos is going to be a decent addition to the Blue Jays. I really do think he would be a decent Blue Jay. Because here's the thing. He's not that bad a defense anymore. I mean that bad by Nick Castellanos standards. By Nick Castellanos standards, he's not that bad at defense anymore. Is he the best hitter anymore? No, he's not. Would he be cheap? Yes. He would be incredibly cheap, especially after the Phillies just quit on him. Do I think the Jays are going to sign him? No, I don't think the Jays have that. We're going to have to do that type of move. That seems like a very un-Jays-like move to sign a guy like Castellanos right now. But I wouldn't hate it. I wouldn't hate it if he's cheap. And you can pull him on to a good contract. If you can pull him on a cheap contract, and he can be an average player, That's a steal. That truly is a steal for a name brand player like Castellanos. But he is certainly isn't an attitude. He's a player. He is a, how do you call it? If the stories of him getting released for bringing beer into the dugout are true, that you're certainly bringing in a character into your dugout. And the Jays, I don't think the Jays necessarily need that right now. But to kind of move along with them will be, I kind of want to make my own predictions. It is my own show. I can make my own predictions. Yeah, I'm going to do that. Yeah, so who do I think is going to win every division? I'll do that because, yeah, I do want to do that. So who do I think is going to win every division? AL East, I feel like the Jays run it back. I don't think the Yankees did enough this offseason. I don't think the here's the thing, the Orioles, I'm a big Orioles guy, like in that type of scenario, like type case. I do like a lot of their players. Do I think, barring a lot of guys having bounce back seasons, are they going to be a 90-win team? No. They are they feel like an 85-win team, and they really don't have the pitching for that. They're not a good team pitching-wise. The Red Sox are intriguing. I will say that. The Red Sox do intrigue me. They intrigue me a lot. I do think the Red Sox, especially if Roman Anthony continues to develop, if Garrett Crochet is nailed still, if the Sonny Gray signing works, if those guys, if everyone works, everyone does their job on that team, that's the second best team in the AL East. The Yankees, it's Aaron Judge show. They need Anthony Volpe to be decent. I don't think they've done nearly anything. Can't even say enough. They've hardly done a thing this offseason. They've re-upped their guys, but I don't think those guys are really that good. They're all aging. How long can Judge stay healthy? That's the question, because I know Garrett Cole is back. He's going to be back sometime soon. But how long can this team stay healthy for? How long can Aaron Judge stay healthy for? Because they have absolutely zero depth, and they're one major injury away from losing it all, in my opinion. They're one injury early. If Judge gets hurt long term early in the season, they might be a 70-something win team. And that's a scary thought if you're a Yankees fan. It's a static thought if you're any other team in the MLB. I kind of want to move on to the Rays. I don't know what I see with the Rays. The Rays are always intriguing because on paper, they're always trash. They're on paper not a good team, but this time around, on paper, they're not that bad of a team. Junior Caminero, Yandy Diaz, these are decent players. If Shane McClanahan isn't cooked, if like they have Steven Matz, if he's like, they have the most mid roster. They generally have the most mid roster. Edwin Yuseta, like, are you kidding me? Like, this is the most mid-tier roster. Cedric Mullins is on this team. Nick Martinez is on this team. But if these guys can put together, they can be a wild card team. If they can put it together. I will say that this feels like one of those Tampa Bay Ray teams that can, if they can put it together, and they can make the playoffs. Now you get to the AL Central. It's going to be anyone's division but the Twins, really. The White Sox, I think they're intriguing now. The White Sox, all of a sudden, they're intriguing now. Murakami's there. Austin Hayes is still there. Benintendi, unfortunately, still there. But they've seemed to be making the right moves. They seem to be intrigued enough with the team to at least start making moves. It seems like they're making moves. Sir Anthony Dominguez, former Blue Jay, is there. Jordan Hicks, former Blue Jay, is also a Chicago White Sox. I don't hate like I used to hate, because they have pieces there that I'm not totally against. Murakami is going to be intriguing. It's just, how good are these intriguing prospects going to be? The Guardians are always going to be decent with Kwan and J-Ram. J-Ram signed that contract saying, hey, I'm going to take a lower pay cut if you guys are going to make me win. And he took it. He took a great contract for the Guardians, and he just wants to win with them. And if you can really think about it, the Guardians, they're not that far off. They're one or two players away from really putting it together, and they kind of have the pitching staff for it. Gavin Williams, if he can stay healthy, because he can stay consistent, is good. They got the Naylor. They got Bo Naylor. Bo Naylor, Mississauga native. What up? They got JRAM. And if you have JRAM and Kwan, I think you are more than fine of making a push for a division. Because in my opinion, with this type of division, it's either you win the division or you're not making the playoffs. Because I don't see there being a two or three 80-plus win teams here. Like, I can see maybe the Tigers. Actually, no. The Tigers are going to be a good team. The Royals are going to be good. The Guardians, I'm not 100% hot on. The Guardians and White Sox are on the same tier of, if things go their way, they can be good. The Twins are going to be garbage. I can probably see, if I would have to choose one, it's going to be the Royals. It's got to be the Royals with the Tigers. They just acquired Framber Valdez. That's a huge move for them. It's going to be a two-headed race, actually. I lied about the whole wild card thing. It's going to be a two-headed race between the Tigers and Royals. Guardians are going to be mid. White Sox are going to be mid. Twins are going to be trash. Moving on to the AL West. I do think this division still runs through two teams. It's still going to run through the Astros and Mariners. I think the Athletics are going to be surprising. The Rangers, I have no feel for the Rangers again. And the Angels, I don't think the Angels are going to be... They're going to be competitive at the start like they always are. They're going to fall off by the end of it. Just total mismanagement by Artie Moreno. And I do think the Astros bounce back. I think the Astros win this division. I think the Athletics and Mariners are going to be really competitive for a wild card spot. I'm really high on the Athletics this season. I think the Mariners are going to be good again. But I do think it's going to be the Astros. The Evil Empire in Houston is going to really take that division. NL East, I feel like, yeah, it's a good time to make some predictions in the NL. It's got to be the Phillies. It's not like the Phillies. It's going to be the Mets division, especially if they choked it last year. It's going to be the Mets. This division is going to be ultra competitive because it feels like the Nationals and Marlins are finally going to be ready to compete to a certain extent. It feels like the Phillies, they have to win. They're in win now mode. You got to win now if you're the Phillies. Because you have aging stars and you have to win with them now because they only have so many more good years left. The Braves, like, their whole issues have been health. If they can stay healthy, they're going to be good. You have Ronald Acuna Jr., Matt Olson, Ozzie Albies. They just acquired Ha-Sung Kim. Spencer Strider still there. You still got Austin Riley. You still got Chris Sale. They got good players. They got a decent bullpen. They got everything they really need to compete. This division is going to be a bloodbath. The NL East is going to be a bloodbath. Every team in here is competitive, in my opinion. The Mets have made every sort of signing with Mankind. I don't know if that's going to really work out for them, but it's going to be a competitive division. And then we really talk about competitive divisions, the less competitive divisions, NL Central. Looking at it, it's going to be a Cubs-Brewers 1-2 duel again. Reds are going to be decent, maybe catch a wild card spot if they take the right direction. I think they're a good team. I don't think they're that good of a team. Pirates and Cardinals forever in the basement for now. It's really weird talking about the Cardinals as a perennial basement team, but I don't think they got much. They don't got anything, really. Mason Wynn's an intriguing player. Alec Burleson's not that intriguing. Dustin May, not really. And there's just not much on this roster that brings joy if I were a Cardinals fan. But I can see them duking it out with the basement with the Pirates. Now moving on to the easiest pick of my day. Who's going to win the NL West? It's going to be the Dodgers. Padres, Diamondbacks, going to fight each other for who's the more mid-team. Giants, it's the Giants. They are perennially 82-82. And then you have the worst team in baseball, the Colorado Rockies, who all of a sudden decide to make some garbage signings because they're just picking up whoever they can pick up. The worst, Tomioki Sugano is going to have like an 8 ERA on this team. Just not a good team. It just will not be a good team, like, whatsoever. Now, that's my MLB picks. I'm going to stand by those. I think Nick Castellanos is going to be a Blue Jay soon, hopefully. It's going to be an intriguing year. I really do think it's going to be an intriguing year. CBA lockout could be soon, but if the Dodgers get upset, I don't think we can move towards CBA, but this season is going to decide a lot on that. Now moving over, I think it's finally time to discuss the elephant in the room. The Seattle Seahawks are the Super Bowl champions. They won convincingly. I don't care about the Patriots' pity points. That game should have been a shutout. It should have been a blowout. I mean, it was a blowout. 29-13 is a blowout. But it wasn't. It didn't feel like a 29-13 game. I was sitting there watching it, and it was just utter, like, Drake May look lost. Will Campbell was trash. Stephon Diggs is trash. I hate Matt Collins. Just bad play all around by that Patriots team, who I knew was fraudulent. I called it last episode. It was going to be a blowout for the Seahawks. I had Seahawk fan Tanner sitting right to my right. I had Frankie right in front of me. I told him straight up, it's going to be a blowout. This is not a good Patriots team. They've had the easiest way into the Super Bowl, both regular season and playoffs. They're not a good team. We're going to get a bit more in depth in that maybe a bit later when we actually have people here. But I can break it down quarter by quarter, really, a little bit. First half was utter trash, straight trash. Jason Myers should have won MVP. Like, both quarterbacks had nothing completion percentages. They had no yards, nothing. It was the Kenneth Walker show, and that was about it. New England had no run game. Drake May didn't do nothing. He had 200 yards in the fourth quarter. The game was over by the fourth quarter. Unfortunately, there was no 28-3 happening here. The game was over by the fourth quarter. So, like, you can really speak to the point where this game was probably, this is probably one of the almost lopsided Super Bowl feelings in a while, because the Seahawks, they drove the field pretty well. They were just settling for field goals. If they converted a few more of those into touchdowns, this one could have easily been 40-7. Could have easily been 40-something-7. And it's just, where do you go for this Patriots team? It's a young team. Where do they go moving forward? I think this was the pinnacle of this Patriots, this current iteration of the Patriots. I don't think they're that, I personally do not think they're that good. I think this is Buffalo's division still. I think they are a perennial wild, they're going to be a wild card team for a while. Maybe make the second round. Maybe make the AFC championship. They do not make the Super Bowl again. For at least the next 10, 15 years, Mike Vrabel is going to be a good coach. He's not going to win a Super Bowl. That's my take. He's not going to win a Super Bowl with the Patriots. And we're going to go in more in depth on the Super Bowl next episode, because I don't know how much longer I can really talk to myself for without sounding stir crazy. But that's all we got for today. That's just been me, Nathan Pagliaroli, your host for Golden Bold. That closes out this February 12th episode of Golden Bold. We will see you after the reading week. Everyone, enjoy your reading week. I know I will.